the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jared. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we're going to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
And remember, Philip Lucas, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates in some of these disasters. We're just interested in finding out what went wrong with them on the day. And then be honest with yourself, if they came on the news, this sort of thing, I mean, you're interested. We're all interested, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. I'll be big packet of Doritos, the sofa, Sky News, plonk myself there all day.
Lovely. What are we wanging on about this week?
The Quintin's Hill rail disaster.
At that time, there was a signal box at Quintin's Hill and four rail tracks ran past. At 6:49, the troop train came under the bridge about 200 yards from the signal box. And that was the first time the driver would have seen this train in his way. He slammed on the brakes and the troop train ploughed into the local train. 1 minute later, the express going towards Glasgow piled into the wreckage, and the effect resulted in a devastating and horrific fire. 216 members of the battalion were killed. A further 12 were killed on the express and the local train, making 228 killed all told. Still the worst accident in the history of British railways.
I was thinking about this as we were coming up to do this podcast. I'm not scared of rail travel at all, and yet there have been a shed load of really horrible rail disasters that involve all of the stuff that I'm really scared of from flying, like massive impact, being like boxed in, fire, big fire. All of that is in a rail.
The only redeeming thing is you're not 30,000 feet up in a rail.
I suppose it's not plummeting out of the sky, but you could be off a viaduct.
Does happen.
Do you know what I mean? Off of what's the difference between
Tay Bridge disaster.
Really?
We haven't done that one, that's a rail disaster.
What happened in that?
Go off a bridge.
How high up do you reckon?
Very high.
See, what's the difference? That's just an air crash, isn't it? That's exactly the same, just with worse concierge service. Much worse. So it's worse, isn't it? Because it's been a worse journey. And then you've plummeted out of the sky. Imagine that, though. You'd be pissed off, wouldn't you? You didn't scared of flying, so you took the train and find yourself plummeting towards the ground at 500 miles an hour.
You hear it a lot, don't you? You hear a lot in the sort of these disasters that happen in sort of miles away in India and Bangladesh. Yeah. You hear these train disasters where they plummet off the bridge. And because, obviously, the nature of how we are, you just go, oh.
Yeah.
Because
it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
So strange.
Whereas if it's Europe, you'd be like, ooh. I'm not saying that's right, but that does happen.
It's true that, like, how bad human beings feel about these disasters, it's totally defined by how far away they are geographically and how long ago they were in time.
Oh, yeah.
And neither of those things should make any difference to us whatsoever.
The trouble is, though, if you were to be as heartfelt with every world disaster as you are with the one that happened 3 miles up the road, you couldn't live your life.
You couldn't live your life. I mean, if you can't get to the bottom of your street because it's on fire, it's a little bit different, isn't it? Okay, so the Quintin's Hill rail disaster, Philip Lucas, what was it?
It was a multi-train rail crash which occurred outside the Quintin's Hill signal box, which is near Gretna Green, Scotland.
When did it happen?
The 22nd of May, 1915.
First World War?
Right in the middle of the beginning.
How many people died?
About 227 people, making it the worst rail disaster in British history.
Oh, right.
The precise death toll, though, has never been established with confidence, as some bodies were never recovered, having been wholly consumed by fire.
Oh, so it's not a jolly one, then?
No,
is
not.
I mean, is there a jolly rail disaster? I suppose there isn't, is there, really? It doesn't really go ahead.
Only when, like, Thomas sometimes comes off the track.
Yeah, that's
when he's
right.
Pulling coal and the fat controller,
Thomas
or whatever they have
the
to
track.
Call him now.
Hang on, so this is the worst rail disaster in British history. How come I've never heard of it?
Well, I think partly it was to do with the time. I mean, First World War, there's a lot of other things going on.
Yep.
Then, of course, you've got morale. You don't want to upset people when there's bigger things going on.
1915.
Yeah.
This is the start of the First World War.
Well,
right?
We were into the fighting.
So we're into the fighting. So now it's... And conscription, I suppose.
Kicking in, yeah.
So, yeah, you'd really want to be like, our boys going over there, everything's going bloody marvellous, we know what we're doing, and all the rest of that.
That's exactly what you want. You want a Second World War kind of speech over a First World War situation.
What, how was that a Second World War speech?
Ah, that was very sort of, bloody boys are going well.
What's a First World War?
Yes, that's what I'll try, yes.
I can't think of words, but like,
you know what fascinates.
That's what First World War feels like to me.
I think that's probably what I had in my head.
I don't know why yes. that is.
As is so often the case.
There's something so much pluckier about the Second World War, isn't
Oh, yeah,
it?
The Second World War is a plucky war.
Yeah. Where the First World War is like, boom, 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 boom. So, Philip Lucas, what's the background of the Quintus Hill Rail disaster, apart from it being during the war and shit?
Well, like you say, you never heard of it, have you? You'd probably heard of it if it happened in London, am I right?
Hey, London Central. It's true, though, London centricness, yeah. Isn't it? Really, starting to, as I get older, it's starting to annoy me more and more, the London centricness.
But then again, saying that, you probably never heard of the Harrow rail crash. That was a big one.
No, I haven't.
So there you go.
What happened in the Harrow rail crash?
Big rail crash in Harrow.
Oh.
It was a toss-up. Could have done that one, could have done this one.
Oh, was Harrow really bad?
Harrow was really bad. Not as bad in terms of death counts as this one. And quite unusual circumstances in this one, so I thought we'd pick this one for now.
Okay,
but we will do Harrow. Anyway, this rail disaster happened in 1915.
Lovely.
A big war going on.
One of the biggest wars.
One of the biggest wars. The war to end all wars that wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, when a big war's going on, it's often said that disasters get covered up by authorities for reasons of morale.
Yeah.
So
that's another cover-up. I love a cover-up.
You do.
I like it. And they're always war ones. They're always war ones, the cover-ups.
Well, you know, it's a debate, isn't it? Do you have to keep morale up? There's a famous one in, which we should cover, actually, a Slapton Sands in Devon,
which
is a preparation for D-Day. There's a load of American troops all getting prepared to land on the beach, and a U-boat comes along and just mullers everyone.
Really?
Yeah, so loads and loads of American troops died, totally hushed up. Nobody knew about it for about 30 years afterwards. It was totally kept quiet, and it was hundreds and hundreds of American soldiers died.
Oh, we should totally do that one.
Yeah.
I understand it.
I get the logic of it, yeah. So,
because,
you know,
everyone knows that once you start feeling like you're losing, you start losing.
I remember I was in the final of a table tennis tournament once, and I got so nervous I lost, whereas I knew I was a better player.
Better player.
Better player than
much better player.
But he had better mental
attitude. Better mental stability.
I lost. I have got over it. Once the United Kingdom declared war on Germany on August the 4th, 1914, a very nice day weather-wise, if I remember rightly from my reading.
What a dichotomy.
Railways obviously became essential to the war effort as the most effective means of moving troops, ammunition and general sort of war machinery about.
It's kind of the only option, really, isn't it, apart from horses?
Really, in those days, yeah.
And wagons.
But it wasn't long before the railway network was obviously creaking under the strain of all this.
Okay.
Because a pretty big thing, the First World War, in terms of moving stuff about.
Yeah.
So in 1915, there was twice as much track as there is today.
Yep.
With all the routes and stations under the command of lots of different private companies.
Oh, like today?
Like today.
So we solved that. And then fucked it up again.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
It's a very British way of dealing with things, isn't it?
But there were even more companies. There was more rail companies in those days and much bigger network. I mean, I won't get boring about this, but when you talk about the heyday of the railway, everyone has a romanticised idea of the 1930s, the golden age of travel. In actual terms of economics, people moved. Actually, the Edwardian period was the most successful period in British railway history.
Yeah.
Actually, by the 30s, numbers were starting to decline a bit, but this is the real heyday of railways. So you've got all these private companies, but there's this overall government body sort of trying to control this and direct where things are going. You know, time of war, government comes in.
Yeah.
But add to this a shortage of trains to transport all these troops and munitions and whatever, which meant that you had carriages on the network that were often older, in a state of disrepair, that had been brought back into service to kind of help plug the gaps. In short, at this time of the war, this is a network under strain.
So you've got a war on and people are basically going, right, we've got to move loads of shit, mate. We've got loads of shit to move. That thing can roll, stick it on the rails. That thing's fine. I know the top's come off, stick it on the rails. Yeah. So they've got everything they've got, they're shitting onto the rails.
Yeah, essentially.
Okay.
As an aside, did you know that in the Falklands campaign, we were so depleted of certain planes that there was talk of even taking one or two out of Hendon Royal Aircraft Museum.
Wow.
And using it in the Falklands.
Bloody hell.
The Vulcan bomber.
I suppose that's what happens, isn't it? Mm. I mean, it's like, I tell you what it's like. It's like when you have loads of people around for dinner. isn't it?
I don't know. I'd never try and do that.
No, no. Okay, so for human beings out there, you know, when you have loads of people out for dinner, after a while, you're using things, people are sitting on things that aren't chairs, because you've got to bring everything into play.
Yes,
piano
yes.
Piano stools are coming into play.
Yes, like the Alan Partridge thing where he gives him some wine in an aerial bowl.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything comes into play to get you through that thing, and that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
The equivalent of getting like an old cool box and sitting on it throughout Christmas dinner is just the sort of train's equivalent of that, I suppose.
Yeah. So.
Old carriages. Yeah.
Now, that's very important, old carriages, because some of those ones that were brought back into service or that were just being used at the time were built from wood and lit by a gas system.
Oh, we've been here before.
Yeah. Which used fuel stored in cylinders beneath the floor.
So literally like a bomb. Literally like a planted bomb.
Needless to say, with this system, if there was a crash, there's going to be a very high risk of fire.
A fire, yeah.
That is where we were with the war and the railways in 1915.
Okay, so to understand this rail disaster, we need to understand the geography of the area, don't we?
Very
Philip
important.
Lucas. And specifically how trains work. And
Track layout.
Yeah, being a man who works on the trains.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, the first thing to say is this is going to be really, really hard to do without pictures, okay?
Okay.
Really hard to do. Right. Think of a railway track, Phil.
Done.
You got two lines, haven't you?
Yep.
One taking trains one way.
Yep.
One taking trains the other.
Yep. Railway,
all
in it, mate.
Very simple.
Yeah. Seen it before. Seen it on the news and that.
Sorted. But on those tracks, right, you get both express trains.
Yep.
And slower trains.
Slow putty foot foot trains.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Or, as is the case nowadays, slow trains and
sedentary trains.
Yes.
Can count the blades of grass as you go past on a train. On the same line, so you've got really fast ones and you've got really slow ones on the same line.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of physics, the fast ones catch up to the slow ones.
Essentially, yeah. You've got these express trains, they'll catch up with the slow trains, and you don't want to slow down the express trains because by nature of the fact they're called express trains, they are faster.
You want to be going faster than the
slow
trains. Exactly.
So what do you do? Well, what you do is to avoid the express train having to be slowed down, railway lines have a thing called loops.
Okay.
Well, we got loops on my little nodgy train that I drive.
Have you?
Yes. Now, let me tell you what a loop is. They are essentially a single track siding that come off the main line,
right,
run alongside it for a little bit,
yeah,
and then rejoin it again.
It's a lay-by.
Like a lay-by, yeah. The main railway line is the straight part of a capital letter D.
Yeah.
Then the loop would be the curved bit.
And so you're a little foot-foot train, you're going along, and then you get a phone call saying, I'm coming fast! Fast train, mate! Right, so you go, shitting fast train coming behind us.
Mm-hmm.
You go into your lay-by.
Yeah.
You sit there for about, what, 25 minutes? Other train thunders past, and then you can keep foot-foot-footing onto your journey.
Yeah, that's essentially it. You're Thomas the Tank Engine, poodling along. They go, Gordon's on his way. You pull in.
Yeah.
Gordon was my favourite.
He was terribly up himself, Gordon.
He was a nasty bit of work, but what a train.
What a train.
I loved him.
He knew what he had, didn't he, Gordon?
Yeah.
You know, so, did Thomas ever come out, by the way? I think he would have been much happier if Thomas...
You think Thomas was a gay train?
Thomas was a total... Thomas was a gay train.
Thomas the Tank Engine.
Fat Controller wouldn't have liked that. It's the 1950s. Yeah.
I'm gay, says Thomas. Oh, that's ruined Christmas dinner, says the Fat Controller.
Fat Controller would have been putting, like, chemicals in his coal to try and change him. They did things like that in those days, didn't they?
They did to try and cure him.
Yeah. If you are a heritage railway fan like I am, nothing worse than thinking, I'm going to go to a nice heritage railway today. And they go, oh, it's a Thomas weekend. Oh, fuck off.
Don't want that.
I tell you what,
lots of kids.
Yeah.
And what, novelty trains, I suppose?
Well, this lovely steam engine, you know, beautiful thing, working all its life, taking coal around the docks or passengers. They paint it in blue and put a face on it. It's demeaning.
Demeaning to the train.
Demeaning to that train.
So they play the ding, 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 ding. Everyone's having a lovely time apart from you.
So you've got the letter. So like I say, you know, straight part of the letter D.
Yep.
Then a loop is obviously that curved part.
Yep.
Well, obviously that would be the right hand side. Inverse that for the other side.
Yeah.
You get what a loop
pair
is.
Pair of ears.
Pair of it. Perfect. Pair of ears. That's what we had at Quintin's Hill. You had a stretch of track, one main line up, one main line down, with passing loops on both sides of those main lines at the same place. This was all controlled by the very nearby Quintin's Hill signal box. And I think you'll agree, Phil, that is all well and good.
Sounds great.
But what was the problem?
Well, the problem, Philip Lucas, is there was a war on, Mike.
Nah.
All right, so there's shed loads of movements happening on the railways. It's busy as, it's like a bank holiday Monday, right? It's busy as
Christmas
tits.
Day in the graveyard.
It's Christmas Day in the graveyard. if we now focus down to the early morning, Phil, mm-hmm. of May the 22nd, 1915 at Quinter's Hill, this is what we've got going on.
Okay.
We've got these two passing holding loops.
Pair of ears.
Right. On the northbound side, you've got that passing loop being occupied by a goods train.
Mm-hmm.
Not, it's not Gordon. What was a, who was one of the...
Well, you'd be looking at Thomas or a Percy here.
So
a smaller engine.
Let's say it's Thomas or Percy is sitting on one of the ears. On the southbound line, you've got that passing loop being occupied by exactly the same thing. So you've got Thomas on one ear and you've got Percy on the other ear. Mm. Okay. In short, both lay-bys got a fucking train in them, mate. Now,
let's put them out of order for any other trains that wanted to use it.
If you're looking to use an ear-like loop, you can't because Thomas the Tank Engine is sat on it, worried about telling his parents he's gay. Right? That's where we are. Now, into this mix, you throw a local northbound passenger train.
Let's make it a Henry.
Let's say Henry. So into this mix, Henry is trotting along. This is so out of order what we're doing here. Henry is chuffing along. But behind Henry, he is being quickly caught up by Gordon.
Yeah, big, fast, a big express train.
And is coming now. It's coming quickly. And I'm now going to move away from the Thomas the Tank Engine metaphor because it's about to get horrible. Okay. So the slow train needs to be moved out of the way of the big express train that's coming up behind it.
Mm.
But with both loops occupied, they can't do that. So the signalman, a man called Mr. George Meakin, decided to move the slow train onto the southbound main line.
That sounds worrying.
Where it's going to stop until the express passes through. But this is where it all starts to go wrong. Because coming down the southbound line was a troop train heading to Liverpool.
Hmm.
Aboard this troop train, in its very old wooden railway carriages with the gas bombs underneath, were about 500 soldiers from the 7th Battalion of the Royal Scots Guard, all heading for Gallipoli, from Leith in Scotland. Just as this was all happening, the signalmen were making a shift change. There's lots of sort of shades of the...
Tenerife,
where lots of things are happening at the same time. Mm. Okay. The morning signalman, James Tinsley, was just arriving, slightly late,
mm-hmm.
to take over from George Meakin. Needless to say, they were having a chat, nice night. People on the train lines, probably quite chatty guys, having a nice time.
How was your brawn last night?
The two drivers from the park goods trains were also in the signal box. They're having a jolly.
Yeah, talking about iron brew and other Scottish stereotypes.
Eventually, they all left James Tinsley to get on with his shift and the night signalman, George Meakin, to sit down and read his newspaper.
Hmm.
As the troop train was bearing down towards them, they signalled it through, apparently having forgotten that the local northbound train was still parked on the southbound main line.
How'd you forget that?
They can see it as well. They're just in a... It's next to them, is it, right?
No, it's near.
It's near, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. The troop train was travelling at 80 miles an hour when it struck the parked local train at approximately 6:49 a.m. So that's a big enough crash, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a big troop train smashing into a stationary train at... 80 miles an hour.
Hmm.
The collision was so hard that the first carriage of the troop train hopped right over the locomotive of the parked train, skipped right over it.
Hmm.
The rest of the train compressed and spilled over onto the northbound main line. 196 metres of train were compressed into less than 65 metres of space. It concertinaed.
Massively.
Concertinaed with people in it at 80 miles an hour.
All because this train... wasn't stopped at a red light further up to wait for this to all happen.
Yeah, awful.
80 miles an hour.
So now this is when it starts to get pretty bad. Fire started almost immediately because you remember the troop train has got gas cylinders underneath it. They've all ignited straight away, right? They don't mix well when they collide with the steam engine, which is essentially burning coal. Okay.
No.
So you've literally got a source of ignition sat there on the rails and then you've got kindling... and gas hurtling towards it at 80 miles an hour. So you're going to create a conflagration.
And of course, within the steam boiler of the steam engine, it's a fire.
It's a fire, yes. And I guess they're carrying lots of coal. They're carrying lots of...
Yeah.
Lots and lots of flammable, combustible material. Okay, this is really horrible now. Soldiers were thrown, crushed and trapped, trying desperately to escape the burning wreckage. It was absolutely horrific. Scene of carnage, and to be fair, Phil, it's about to get quite a lot worse.
God, how could
because
it?
Less than 30 seconds later, they hear the whistle from the other train. Now, Gordon, which we mentioned before, Gordon's actually flown past. Mm. He's gone through okay, okay, because they got that first train onto the southbound carriageway. That one part of untying the knot has been done. But, of course, there are other trains coming about for this. So 30 seconds after the track, a whistle started to blow. And that whistle was from another northbound London to Glasgow express train that was fast approaching the site of the crash.
Oh, my God.
Okay, it's bearing down on them. Okay. And it was desperately trying to slow down because it can see. It's a huge fire. It's in front of it. It's desperately trying to slow down before it can get to the disaster.
And fast trains like that will take over a mile to stop.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
So that must be awful because you can just see it. You can see what you're going into. So they struck the burning wreckage at nearly 50 miles an hour. So it had slowed down a bit, but this is essentially a motorway pileup.
That's still fast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
thing, and all that weight behind it.
All that weight, all of those people. Many of the men who had managed to escape that initial collision were then mown down. So they'd been able to get out of the tube train, and then they just mowed down by another
This
train.
One coming the other way. Oh, my God.
The survivors, as well as nearby farm workers and villagers who were alerted by the sound of the disaster, came and started pulling people from the wreckage. Some of the men had to have their limbs amputated on the site to get them out of the fire, to get them free. And there are kind of rumours, unsubstantiated, not without more than one eyewitness report, that say that some of the men who were trapped in the fire were shot to keep them from being burned alive. So this is a properly horrific thing. There's a huge amount of chaos, quite a lot of fire, huge injuries, and some pretty awful human tragedies that are having to be sort of sorted out.
God, I mean, what do you do if you are, if your only option is to be burnt to death and you're in the army and you've got a gun? Do you shoot people to make it better for
them? I think that's... I would much rather a bullet in the head.
Yeah.
You know.
I think you're probably right.
Yes. Horrible. Yeah. Now, the weird thing about all this carnage is that on the local train that was sitting on the southbound main line, only two people were killed.
Wow.
Only two. On the northbound express that followed up the initial disaster, the death toll was seven.
It's not as many near as much as you think.
Is that because it slowed down, I suppose?
I would have expected more.
You would have expected much, much more, wouldn't you? I suppose it's because that initial collision is so huge.
Yeah, I guess.
The mass of the casualties were the troops heading to Gallipoli, which is ironic in itself, isn't it? The official death toll listed by the army was 210, but only 83 of the Royal Scots dead could be identified because they've been burned.
Charred, really burned.
Of the 500 troops on the train, only 65 were present for roll call that afternoon. That's going to work!
God, imagine that. The worst, Britain's worst ever rail disaster. All your mates have been burnt to death and you've got to go that afternoon for a roll call. Mind you, maybe.
It's worse than working for Sports Direct.
There's actually a photo of that roll call.
Is there? Of the 65 guys? How do they look?
A little bit haggard.
A little bit haggard.
Yeah.
Jesus.
A little bit shocked, I think.
That's as bad as any plane crash.
Oh, it's horrendous, isn't it?
That's all of the stuff of as bad as a bad plane crash, right? Right, so aftermath, me Phil, what were the changes?
Okay, the first thing to say was that the accident was absolutely devastating for the Scottish town of Leith.
Oh, it's because they're all from.
From Leith, yeah. It was said that there was not a family in the town who was not untouched by the tragedy. 149 of the 215 dead troops were from Leith. One road in Leith, Albert Street, lost 13 residents, all aged between 17 and 26.
One road? Bloody hell.
Grim. Some of the bodies from the tragedy were never recovered, having been wholly consumed by fire.
Jesus.
Those of the troops who could be buried were returned to Leith and buried together in a mass grave, which you can still see today in Edinburgh's Rosebank Cemetery.
Why would they give them a mass? That seems a bit out of order. Give them a mass grave.
It's a war.
Okay, fair enough.
All died together.
Oh, I suppose.
Talking of mass grave, the coffins were laid three deep.
Didn't even get your own plot.
No. But on the plus side, if there is any plus, there is an annual remembrance ceremony, which is still held there every year. That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice people remember. But yeah, mass grave, it's...
Have you seen it? Have you been to Leith?
I've been to Leith. I haven't seen it. The only thing I've seen in Leith is the Royal Yacht... Yeah, drug addicts in the Royal Yacht Britannia.
Oh, is the Royal Yacht Britannia in Leith?
Yeah, it shouldn't be, my view.
No, why not?
It's in the most horrible place.
It's hot. Well, that Leith docks is nasty.
It's just stuck behind a Debenhams.
Yes.
A real horrible...
Not for long. Yeah, it is a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Leith's all right.
Leith's
I mean,
okay.
It's not great, but it's okay.
I just think there's better places for the Royal Yacht Britannia than round the back of a crap Debenhams. Nothing wrong, have it in Leith, but put it somewhere nicer.
Yeah.
Bloody Queen ship, after all, God's sake.
Oh, sink it.
Among, this is horrible, among all the coffins of the victims were four bodies which were unidentified and appeared to be the remains of children.
Right.
And remember, this is the Edwardians, they're sturdy people.
Yeah.
One coffin was simply labelled as little girl, unrecognisable.
Fucking hell.
And another as...
Fucking hell, that's awful.
I know. Three trunks, probably children.
That is cold.
This isn't it.
That is
brutal.
Cold, man.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Just a tag, isn't it? Just like, mm. Yeah.
Probably children.
Mm.
Probably.
But as no children were reported missing,
yeah,
the railway company moved those bodies to Glasgow for possible identification, but nobody came forward to collect the bodies. So some people think that they may have been soldiers' bodies that were just badly shriveled reduced by the burning.
Crushed as well, because it concertina, right? So crushed.
So it's likely they were soldiers' bodies, but we still don't know. And the sad thing is that those four bodies, for some reason, were not only unclaimed, but were never included in the official death count of 227.
So just wiped off.
Just wiped off the face of the earth, yeah.
Wow.
But, as I mentioned, we must remember, Phil, that these vintage people were made of sterner stuff.
Yeah.
So on the 23rd of May, and that is one day after the crash,
yeah,
a recruitment meeting was held in Edinburgh to raise a new army battalion to replace the one that was lost. A day later.
But that's, there's a fucking war on, mate.
Well, yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's not as bad as the, obviously this will come out a few months, 3 weeks after this has happened, but the Duke of Edinburgh has just had a crash.
Oh, his car crash, yeah.
New Land Rover delivered the next day.
Was it?
And I thought, have a bit of respect for the woman whose wrist you broke. It just really, really annoyed me that he got a new, like, out of order annoyed me that he got a new Land Rover immediately. I was like, wait a day before you show pictures, you piss some of your wad off on a new Land Rover.
Didn't he go in it and not wear a seatbelt or something?
The next day, he's driving around with no seatbelt. It's like, but they're so rich, nothing touches them. Oh, I rolled that one over onto some woman. But just get me a new gun.
I've got a book of Prince Philip's best quotes.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's tremendous. Love Prince Philip.
But we must admit that these people do seem like sturdier people than us, right, Philip Lucas?
They absolutely were. I mean, the railway itself was opened 3 days after the crash.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Straight away. But this is the horrible bit. Although, when it was open, not all the wreckage had been removed from the two express trains.
Right.
So as you went past on your train, you would see all the burnt-out remains of those trains. You don't want to see that.
How long do you think that would be closed now?
A couple of weeks, I reckon.
I reckon a long time.
Yeah.
A long, long time. Yeah. You know, inquiries, all the rest of that. You know, period of mourning. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
No.
But you know, I'm also saying people got to get to Greg the Green, haven't they? Got to get married.
Harsher times, Phil.
Yeah.
Harsher times. Well, needless to say, Phil, what happens after all these disasters?
I think we should have an inquiry.
And the thing about inquiries, you can do it two ways. You can have an inquiry because you need to have an inquiry.
Yep.
Very important to find out what happened.
Yeah.
Or you can do what tends to happen nowadays with governments. If we have an inquiry, it just shuts people up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But in this case, they need to find out what went wrong here.
Yeah. The first official investigation into the disaster commenced in Carlisle, Phil.
Ah.
On the 25th of May, it was conducted by Lieutenant Colonel E. Druitt of the Railway Inspectorate.
Sir?
I reckon Lieutenant Colonel E. Druitt could do a good inquiry.
Oh, he sounds like he's got all the credentials.
The report was presented to the Board of Trade on the 17th of June 1915, and it laid the blame squarely on the two Quintus Hill signalmen, George Meakin and James Tinsley, because it is their fault.
It seems to be. They forgot that a train was sitting on fast railway line.
They forgot every part of their job, which was to make sure trains don't hit each other at 80 miles an hour. This report on the 17th of June 1915 cited a number of breaches of regulations. You want to take us through those breaches, Mr. Philip Lucas?
Regulation breaches? How exciting. Right, shift change your regularity.
Oh, man alive.
Okay. For the 6 a.m. shift change, the signalman had developed an informal agreement allowing whoever was working the early shift to arrive later for work at around 6:30 a.m.
Right.
This allowed the day shift signalman to have a little longer in bed.
Lovely.
Unofficial arrangement. But to avoid this being detected by the bosses, it's very clever this, whichever signalman was working the night shift would record all the trains that had passed. They have to do that, train register entries.
Yeah.
They would record everything after 6 a.m. on a piece of paper rather than the official register book. So when the day shift man arrived, he would then copy those entries in his own handwriting.
I've definitely had jobs where I've done that.
That's very clever. Yeah. But the problem here is the changing of the shifts was a safety critical moment, where it was essential when the signalman taking over the box was fully aware of the position of the trains at that time that he was taking over.
Yeah.
So the need for signalman Tinsley, this guy just come into work, to copy out all of those train register entries in his handwriting probably distracted him from his duties in relation to all the things he should actually be thinking about.
Yeah, because he's nobbling the books. Yeah, he's nobbling the books when he should be looking at trains.
Yeah, it seems very likely that was a factory letting a crowded troop train plough into a station train at 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's bad news, man.
Okay. Block signalling omissions.
Ooh, okay, fantastic.
Okay, now this is all quite complicated, to be fair, Phil, so I won't go into it in detail.
Okay.
In short, George Meakin, the night shift bloke.
The guy who's leaving.
The guy who's leaving, yeah. He failed to implement two safety measures.
Yeah.
He did not notify the signal box to the north of him that no train should be allowed into his section.
That seems like a big mistake to me.
Yes. Secondly, he didn't place something called a locking safety collar on the signal lever. Meanwhile, James Tinsley, day shift bloke, it's just simply forgotten about the local train sitting on the southbound track. Now, without that safety collar, which you put on the...
I mean, it's literally a lever, right? Massive big lever.
Yeah, but you could put a safety collar on it. So you can't use it.
It's like the safety catch on a gun, right?
But old night shift bloke forgot to put the safety catch on. Nothing there. So the guy comes in for the day, goes, no safety catch on. Well...
So these guys were inept, incompetent.
Yeah.
Pair of dickheads.
Well, harsh, but under the circumstances.
I think if over 200 people are going to be burned alive because you're not doing your job right, I think you're fair to call them a pair of dickheads.
Especially when they are unable to perform a satisfactory Rule 55, Phil.
What's Rule 55?
Under this rule, if any train was stopped on the main line for longer than 3 minutes, the driver of that train was required to send one of his crew to the signal box in order to remind the signaller of the presence of that train and to ensure that the necessary safeguards to protect that train were in place.
So they did fuck all.
Well, since the local train that had been stopped for longer than 3 minutes, its fireman, George Hutchinson, was deposited to the signal box. However, when he turned up, he merely signed the train register to show that the train was there. He didn't look at the signalman who was at his back to him, and he just returned back to his train without even speaking to him. So it could have not even... been known that he was there.
These guys couldn't give a toss.
No.
They're phoning this in, aren't they? Like, they don't want to be at work, you know, they couldn't give a toss. They're doing the bare minimum to get through this day. Arsing around, smoking, talking bollocks.
Maybe it's that. Well, that links into this one, Phil. Unauthorised persons in signal box.
Oh, they have mates up there?
Well, various railwaymen are requested to visit the signal box as part of their duties. We just heard that.
Yeah.
But it was expressly forbidden for such visitors to stay any longer than was absolutely necessary, obviously due to the potential for distraction.
Yeah.
However, signal boxes, we've all been in them.
Oh, lovely.
Heritage Railways, lovely, aren't they? Comfortable, little fire, little stove, little kettle.
Teas and coffees,
so
biscuits.
There was very much a temptation to stay longer. When old James Tinsley arrived for his morning shift, the guard of one of the goods trains was sitting in.
Yep.
As was the other guy from the other goods train.
Percy and Thomas.
Yep. They were still there, funny enough, when the collision had occurred 15 minutes after that. Furthermore, after handing over the working of the signal box to Tinsley, signalman Meakin, the night shift bloke, he just stayed in the box and read his newspaper. They're all in there. Just
it's
sitting
a clubhouse.
Chilling. Yeah.
They're sitting and chilling.
Yeah.
And I bet, because they're blokes as well, I bet it's all fucking banter, mate.
But in an Edwardian accent. So if you can
Oh, the wife. Isn't she Dave? Hey, Dave wouldn't know. Tiny penis Dave.
Perfect. One other breach of the rules. Forgetfulness. I think that probably explains itself, that one.
Basically... you got a box filled with cake and tea and newspapers and eaters. You got how many dickheads? Six dickheads?
About six dickheads.
About six dickheads. All having a bend. Ah, talking about the war. And not paying attention to what they're supposed to be doing.
And forgetting that they've got a stationary train on an express main line sitting there.
Yeah. Doesn't it make you realise that, you know, people moan about the sort of computerisation of the world.
Mm.
But I tell you what, I would trust computers a billion times over these dickheads. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so happy that, like, computers have taken these dickheads out.
Well, that's it. There's a reason why signal boxes have largely gone and it's all centrally controlled.
Yeah, because you can't rely on people who are basically making tea.
Well, yeah, computers don't go, I'm going to start half an hour late because I fancy a bit extra in bed.
That's right. It's all right because my mate will write the fucking numbers down.
Computer's like, no.
The computer's, yes. I would have computers over these men any day, you know what I mean? It really annoys me, actually, because, like, you're in that troop train.
Mm.
You're going to freaking Gallipoli. I mean, you're feeling worried enough. You're about to be dodging rifle fire, and you've got these five dickheads having tea. Oh, it's made me angry, Phil. Because it's so similar to the Tenerife air crash, and that made me angry.
It did make you angry. People in control boxes not doing their job really gets to
you, doesn't it?
Well,
I tell you what gets to me. I don't mind if a volcano erupts and you get seared to death. I don't mind that.
Work of God.
I don't mind, like, people with the best intentions making mistakes. I even don't mind that Noel Edmonds once killed a man.
He didn't.
But it does piss me off when loads of people die in what is got to be the most horrific way you can possibly die because dickhead men aren't doing their jobs properly.
Well, in addition to these points, Phil, the report also highlighted a number of recommendations for improving passenger safety that were beyond the control of the signalman.
Okay.
These included making future coaches out of steel instead of wood.
Sounds good.
And I don't know, could be contentious, but maybe they should abolish the dangerous gas cylinder lighting under the existing stock.
I say don't put a bomb under them.
Mm. Seems very logical now in hindsight.
It is easy
it?
In hindsight, yeah. Isn't it? Yes.
After the report, both Tinsley and Meakin were put on trial.
Good.
Charged with culpable homicide.
Good.
And found guilty.
Done.
Tinsley was sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Seems fair.
Meakin, 18 months.
Fair.
But they each served just over a year in prison before being released.
Ah, there's a war on.
But the good news for passengers, who may have been a little bit wary of the railway after this disaster, is that both those guys returned to work on the railway.
Wow.
Although it must be said, no longer as signalmen.
What, as those guys with big hammers in out in the cold?
I mean, I'm not sure I'm massively happy about them returning to work on the railway after serving half their sentence.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm slightly happier they're not signalmen anymore. At least someone went, well, yes, you can come back now, you've done your time. But no, no naughty men are not allowed in the signal box.
Yeah.
You know what happened last time.
I'm not sure. You'd think they would give them a lifetime ban and say, go be a gardener or something. Go to Gallipoli and get yourself cut to ribbons with machine gun fire.
Well, you'd think that would be the end of it there, wouldn't you? Actually, Phil, there's a little bit more.
Oh.
Because both men returned to work for the same company after being in prison, it has led to a theory that a deal was struck between the signalman and the railway.
Yeah. Well, in 2015, this piece of paper says, a BBC documentary called Britain's Deadliest Railway Disaster re-examined the disaster from the perspective of a modern-day rail inquiry.
Oh.
Oh, cool. It argued that both signalmen had been made scapegoats for the crashes. I feel bad now. For calling them dickheads.
Well, it's the BBC, so there could be a lefty agenda.
Good point. They found fault with both the railway company and the government. Yeah, it does sound like the BBC, who ran the railway in wartime. Going further, they cited the fact that both men returned to work after their sentences, which is weird, and it postulated there had been some conspiracy between the company and the men to take sole blame for the accident. I don't think this rings true, mate, because why would they take that on board? It criticised the railway company's attitude to its own rules, which the documentary alleged it must have known were not routinely followed to the letter. They argued that the tardy practices of turning up late for a shift change would have, at the very least, been known to their immediate managers.
Well, managers probably did it as well. Everyone cuts corners.
But just because everyone does it doesn't make it... Just because everyone does it, Phil, don't make it right.
This report also sought to take some blame away from Tinsley because he may have been suffering from a form of epilepsy which affected his short-term memory.
He's suffering from having a bit of tea and a biscuit and reading the paper early in the morning.
Yeah. But his epilepsy apparently would have explained why he'd forgotten about the local train.
Maybe.
I guess we'll never know the truth.
If you've got epilepsy, I don't think you should be doing that job.
No. They are mutually exclusive, aren't they? This report also criticised the railway company and the government for using the older wooden stock, which we talked about at the troop tray, arguing that it was already known it was unsafe and in the process of withdrawal. And this was a risk that was not even justified, even in an environment of war. I think it probably was.
I think it was as well.
I think you use anything you can. Take the risk.
It's Christmas time at Nana's. You've got to get everything out.
I'm not convinced of that BBC nonsense.
Me neither. That feels to me like looking for an angle.
Yeah.
Whereas you can really see five blokes in a signal box smoking and having a jolly. We've all had jobs and you take what you can get. You take the moments, don't you? So I don't blame them for that. But I think that trying to crowbar in some sort of systemic, overarching reason why these poor blokes weren't able to do their job properly seems to me like bullshit. So Phil, the Quintus Hill rail disaster, freaking horrible. Our fault or God's fault?
I think it was the signalman's fault.
Yep.
For even though whilst employed in their role they have the power of gods.
Yes.
Trouble is they're not gods,
are they?
No.
They're little squitty men.
Little squitty
men with those little clicky clacky things. You're on the wrong train, that'll mean it leaves at 15:41. Me, work on the trains.
I'd love to work. I want to be a shunter.
You are a shunter. You do work on a train.
Or a big train.
Well, go and work on a big train. Work your way up.
Got to find the right role.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be a conductor.
Oh, God, I don't want to deal with the public.
No, God, that.
No, it's the trains that I like. I'd happily run trains all day long with no one on. I just want to drive them. Anyway, before we sign off, I've got weird facts for you.
Love weird facts.
All the troops on the doomed troop train were actually supposed to have left a day earlier than they did.
Oh,
but because the ship that was going to carry them to Gallipoli had run aground, they were delayed by 24 hours.
Oh.
So if that ship hadn't run aground, none of this would have happened.
Gutted.
The local train that was sitting still on the southbound main line at the time of the crash was the very one that the old morning signalman had travelled to work on. So not only did he forget it was there, he was physically on the thing.
See,
just before.
That's everything, isn't it? He did not forget that was there. He just wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
Because you can't forget a train that you travelled to a place
to work on
has disappeared.
There were rumours that some of the troop survivors
used
the opportunity of the disaster to make themselves scarce at the scene, run away and not have to go to war.
I mean,
they disappeared into the ether.
That is me.
Yeah.
That is me. I am one of those little specks smoking and stealing across the fields. Yes. That's
running.
Me.
Running across cornfields like Theresa May.
Yeah, that's right.
This one's horrible. Oh. It was reported in the Edinburgh Weekly that on their march home, some of the surviving troops looked so bedraggled that children thought they were prisoners of war and started pelting them.
God.
After all they'd been through.
Oh,
their own kin.
Fucking rule Britannia. Well, that was a really great one.
Horrid.
Really, really horrible, but really, really interesting. So, that was the Quintus Hill rail disaster. Phil, do you enjoy it?
I suppose enjoy it. It was interesting,
yeah.
It was horrendous, but...
So that was the end of episode 14. Thank you so much for listening. Have we had any reviews recently that we can talk about?
Oh, we had one, yeah. We've had a gentleman who very much enjoyed one of our podcasts.
Oh, brilliant.
But we said something, apparently it was me, said
about Leicester.
Something negative about Leicester. Now, come on. This is a spur of the moment. Think of a line.
It was a very good joke as well.
I thought it was
very
all right.
Good joke.
But I don't like... Anyway, he thinks I've dissed Leicester.
So let's say something nice about Leicester.
I like Leicester. It's a nice place. It was an off-the-cuff moment.
Yeah.
I'm going up to Leicester quite shortly.
Huh?
Going to look at the Battle of Bosworth Battlefield.
Oh, are you going to visit Richard III?
I am.
Excellent.
That's how I like to spend my weekends.
Leicester has, in my opinion, the best comedy festival in Britain.
It's very nice, isn't it?
Much better than Edinburgh, much better than Brighton, much better than Glasgow. Although I've never been to the Glasgow Comedy Festival. Please book me. Leicester has a great comedy festival. So I think if you don't take anything away from this Quintus Hill rail disaster, you should take away the fact that Leicester is a number one destination.
So sorry.
Sorry for dissing Leicester. If you want to get in touch with us and take us to task for anything else we've said, how can they do that, Mr. Philip Lucas?
They can get us on Twitter at CBWallop.
Beautiful. And Facebook, of course.
Just put in Crash Bang Wallop. We're there. iTunes.
We're on Instagram now.
We are on Instagram, yes. Yeah. On Instagram, we are at Wallet Bang.
Yeah, get in touch with us on Instagram. Get in touch with us on all platforms because we love you very much. Thank you so much for listening. Philip, have you got anything else to add?
Nothing.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.